Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Technology Report and This is America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. United States officials recently fined Asiana Airlines $500,000 for failing to help victims of a plane crash last year. Three people died and more than 180 were injured when the plane hit a seawall while landing in San Francisco, California. U.S. officials say Asiana officials failed to act quickly to assist the families of passengers involved in the crash. An earlier investigation found that communication among the plane's crew members may have been an issue.
Why would you have two pilots in an airplane if they're not going to talk to each other?
We will hear more about that later in the program. And we report on changes the South Korean airline is making in its training for pilots. But first, we have a progress report on President Barack Obama's plan to increase the U.S. military's presence in East Asia and the Pacific. Some officials have described the move as a pivot to the Asia-Pacific area.
We have to do better at being able to communicate with each other in a way that allows us to not lead to miscalculation that won't be productive in the security environment.
We are talking about pivots and pilots today on As It Is from VOA Learning English. 2 years ago, President Obama announced plans to redirect America's defense policy. He said the military would reduce its presence in the Middle East and instead send more forces to the Asia-Pacific area. But the U.S. military is now facing tests from China and its growing military power. U.S. military officials say American influence in the Asia-Pacific area is not growing weaker. But recent actions by China show that influence is being tested. China's military has established an aircraft identification zone over the East China Sea. And in a recent incident, Chinese and U.S. Navy ships almost crashed into one another. The Obama administration wants to move U.S. forces from wars in Iraq and Afghanistan to the Asia-Pacific area. But China has been building up its forces in the Pacific. It has sent a new aircraft carrier to the area and developed new missile technology. Admiral Samuel Locklear is the commander of U.S. forces in the Pacific. He says American and Chinese forces will likely increase their dealings with one another in the area. So he thinks the two militaries should increase their contacts. Defense experts question whether the American pivot to Asia has in fact resulted in a strengthening of forces in the Pacific. Barry Pavel is with the Atlantic Council in Washington, D.C.
We have the deployment of 2,500 or so Marines to Northern Australia. That'll be there on a somewhat routine basis. Not a very big nor significant deployment in my estimation. There's a couple of ships. I think they were literal combat ships that were discussed as being homeported in Singapore. And then there really hasn't been anything else.
The U.S. military has deployed a combat ship to Singapore. And it sent the aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan to replace another carrier at Yokosuka, Japan. American officials say they could add more ships, equipment, and troops in the future. But last month, the Obama administration announced plans to cut the U.S. military to its smallest size since the end of World War II. Experts say that could affect any future military moves in the Asia-Pacific area. You are listening to As It Is. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We now turn to our story about Asiana, South Korea's second largest passenger airline. The company is changing its training for pilots in an effort to persuade crews to talk more openly. Steve Ember has our report.
Asiana Airlines wants to improve communication in the airplane's cockpit, the enclosed area where pilots sit. An American investigation found that cockpit culture and pilot training may have been an issue in the crash of an Asiana plane last July.
Good morning, Asiana 214, final 7 miles.
Asiana Flight 214, a Boeing 777, crash-landed short of the runway at the San Francisco International Airport in California.
Everybody calling standby. Do not taxi Frontier 830. Hold your position.
Three people died and 180 others were hurt.
United 885, Roger, we have emergency vehicle responding.
Between the runways, there are people right adjacent to the numbers. We can see about two or three people that are moving and apparently survived.
Roger.
Last August, VOA was the first media organization to report that the crash could be linked to the way pilots treat each other in the cockpit. Usually, when such issues happen, it is a matter of pilots not wishing to question a decision which they feel to be dangerous when made by the captain or senior pilot. But the Asiana crash resulted from a different kind of failure to communicate. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board held a hearing on it in December. Investigators said the pilot making the landing was being trained by a more experienced 777 pilot and was afraid to tell his training pilot that he wanted to cancel the landing and try again. This was because Korean culture would not have allowed him to speak up, even though cockpit alarms were sounding, warning that the plane was at too low a speed and not correctly positioned for landing. Now, Asiana Airlines is changing the way it trains pilots. The company will urge more open discussion among pilots about flying decisions. Pilots will depend less on years working for the company, military service, or age. David Kirstein works in aviation regulatory law for Kirstein and Young, a Washington-based law group.
Why would you have two pilots in an airplane if they're not going to talk to each other?
He also says the new training does not surprise him.
There's probably pressure from the U.S. aviation officials or the NTSB or their own government. There may be a fall off in traffic that consumers are worried about. If people aren't flying on you, that's the most motivating factor there is.
While many airlines have already put in place cockpit resource management, the idea of open communication in the cockpit, the head of Asiana Airlines has admitted that many of their pilots work and fly within a strict military order. David Kirstein says other airlines should note the changes at Asiana. He says they also should understand the importance of open communication in the cockpit. I'm Steve Ember.
Thank you, Steve. We would like to know what you want to hear about on a future program. Just send us a letter or a postcard. Our address is VOA Learning English, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com. You can also go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, and click Contact Us.
The Technology Report is next, followed by This is America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Technology Report. Monkeys have learned to move the arms of a monkey on a computer screen just by thinking about moving them. The work moves forward efforts to develop brain-controlled devices for people who are paralyzed or unable to move certain parts of their body. Researchers have developed software that runs between the monkeys' brains and a machine. They hope it could someday be used to let someone with a spinal cord injury control an artificial arm or leg just by thinking about it. The software was developed by researchers at the Center for Neuroengineering at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. Early versions of the software could control only one artificial limb. But the new software lets rhesus monkeys move two arms at the same time as they watch a likeness of themselves on a computer screen. Miguel Nicolelis is a neurobiology professor at Duke. He says the monkeys first learn to control the limbs on the computer screens using joysticks. Then they were trained not to move.
They're trained just to imagine the movements, and we get the signals from both parts of their brains, both hemispheres, to be routed to a computer. They're running a computer algorithm that then translates their voluntary will to move into movements of a virtual body.
Professor Nicolelis says scientists are now developing clothing that can be controlled by the brain. It would permit the person wearing the clothing to control artificial limbs. The device changes electrical signals from the brain into commands, and then into digital signals that a machine in the clothing can understand. Professor Nicolelis says the vest will be shown at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil later this year.
And we hope to make a demonstration during the opening ceremony by having a young paraplegic Brazilian adult to walk into the field using this vest, controlled by brain activity, and be in charge of the opening kickoff of the World Cup.
You can find an article on the research in the journal Science Translational Medicine. In a separate but related story, a Danish man has become the first amputee to experience feeling in his artificial hand. Dennis Abo lost his hand to fireworks 9 years ago. Since then, he has used a prosthetic hand. Last year, researchers in Italy and Switzerland attached sensors to the fingers of the artificial hand. They then wired the sensors to the nerves in Abo's upper arm. Researchers say the experiments proved promising, but they say many years of work remain. An article on that research also appears in the journal Science Translational Medicine. And that is the Technology Report from VOA Learning English. I'm June Sims.
From VOA Learning English, welcome to This is America. I'm Steve Ember. Visitors to Washington, D.C. know about such tourist attractions as the Lincoln and Jefferson Memorials, the World War II Memorial, the Washington Monument, But we'd like to tell you today about a very special monument just across the Potomac River from Washington in Arlington, Virginia. The Marine Corps War Memorial, also called the Iwo Jima Memorial, is one of the largest freestanding statues in the world. Today, we tell you about this memorial and the story behind it.
It's very overpowering. You can't help but think about all the lives that have been lost for our country.
Our program today is about one moment in time. Really, 1/400th of a second. That's the amount of time it took Associated Press photographer Joe Rosenthal to capture an historic image on film. The photograph shows six men and an American flag during a battle in World War II. Joe Rosenthal took the picture on February 23, 1945, on the Pacific island of Iwo Jima. Japanese forces held the island. American Marines were attempting to capture it. On the fourth day of battle, Marines fought to the top of Mount Suribachi, the tallest mountain on Iwo Jima. A small American flag was sent to the top. The Marines placed the flagpole in the ground and raised the flag into the air. But the flag could not be seen clearly far below. Commanding officers ordered the Marines to replace it with a much larger one. Joe Rosenthal was among Marines when he heard there would be a flag ceremony. He wanted to capture the event on film, so he took his camera and climbed slowly up the mountain, avoiding marked landmines. But when he got to the top, it was too late. The ceremony had ended. He then saw other Marines carrying another flag. Joe Rosenthal backed away from the group. He hoped to get a picture of both flags, one being removed and the other being placed on a pole. But he began talking to another photographer and missed the moment he was waiting for. A minute later, he saw movement out of the corner of his eye. "There it goes," he said. He swung his camera up, following the movement of the flag, and took his famous photograph. Four men are clearly seen in the photo. They are Harlan Block, a Marine from Texas, John Bradley, a Navy corpsman from Wisconsin, Franklin Sousley, a Marine from Kentucky, and Ira Hayes, a Marine and American Indian from Arizona. Behind these men are two other Marines. They are Rene Gagnon of New Hampshire and Mike Strank. Mr. Strank lived in Pennsylvania, but was born in what was then Czechoslovakia. The next day, Joe Rosenthal's film went by airplane to the island of Guam, where it was developed and printed. The photographs were given to an Associated Press photo editor. It was the editor's job to decide which ones to send to the United States. They would go on a machine that sent images by radio. As histories tell it, the editor looked and looked at the first photograph and said, "This is one for all time." Within minutes, he sent the picture of the six men raising the flag to the Associated Press headquarters in New York. From there, the photo went to newspapers across the United States. Most decided to print a huge copy on their front page. Many photo experts will tell you that the picture Joe Rosenthal made is almost perfect. The camera catches the flag as it rises. The flagpole cuts across the photograph. Wind blows against the flag. The experts also say you must look at the picture as the American public saw it in 1945. The world had been at war for years. Victory was not yet certain. Many people worried about family members. Many had a deep fear of the enemy. The picture shows strength and courage. It suggests that six young men are working together to defeat the enemy. Joe Rosenthal's photograph seemed to say, "The battle may not be over, but we are winning." It was the very image of a future American victory. In Washington, D.C., Felix de Welden saw the photograph in the newspapers. At the time, he was working at an Air Force base. Born in Austria, he came to the United States and was an artist in the Navy. Many years later, he would say, "When I first saw it, I recognized the power of this photograph. I could not take my eyes from it. I looked at the photograph for some hours and then began working." Felix de Welden made a small statue of Joe Rosenthal's picture in 72 hours. Within days, members of Congress had seen the small statue. Many began to call for a huge statue. President Franklin Roosevelt ordered the Marine Corps to send home the men who had raised the flag. By then, however, it was too late. Mike Strank, Harlan Block, and Franklin Sousley were dead. They were among the more than 6,000 Marines killed on Iwo Jima. Navy Corpsman John Bradley had been severely wounded, but he, Rene Gagnon, and Ira Hayes returned to the United States. People said they were heroes. The three men said they had done nothing but help put up a flag. But Joe Rosenthal's photograph was so powerful, nothing would change people's minds. Felix de Welden soon made a life-size copy of the statue. He carefully copied the faces of the three survivors. He used all the photographs he could find for the three who had been killed. Joe Rosenthal's photograph became more and more famous. His work earned the Pulitzer Prize. There was public demand to put the image on a postage stamp. In July of 1945, the government agreed. More than 137 million stamps were produced. People also demanded a huge statue of the six Marines. So in 1946, Felix de Welden started all over again. First, he made a statue out of plaster. Then he used the plaster form as a guide to make the final statue out of bronze metal. It took him 9 years to complete the statue. The memorial honors all members of the United States Marine Corps who died in battle since the American Revolution. Each of those battles is mentioned at the base of the statue. On November 10, 1954, President Dwight Eisenhower led dedication ceremonies at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. The burial grounds are across the Potomac River from Washington. The three surviving Marines, Ira Hayes, Rene Gagnon, and John Bradley, and photographer Joseph Rosenthal attended the ceremonies. It was their last time together. Ira Hayes died 3 months later. In 1994, John Bradley died. He was the last to die of the six men who raised the flag on Iwo Jima. Felix DeWeldon died in 2003, and Joe Rosenthal in 2006. Over the years, millions of people have come to see the huge statue that Felix DeWeldon made.
It's very impressive. It's a great piece of history.
It stands in a grassy area at the edge of Arlington National Cemetery.
Fantastic. You know, it's very emotive. It's something that you see on many images from around the world, and to actually come and see it, it's even more immense than what you imagine it is.
The statue weighs more than 20 tons. Each man is almost 10 meters tall. The men seem about to move. Their bodies push forward as they struggle to raise the flag. Their clothes show the bones and muscles underneath. Their faces show the hard work.
And you just saw what a bitter battle it was, terrible battle, and the bravery of the men. And we'd heard that even artistically, this was an absolutely beautiful, beautiful monument. And it is, it's very moving. And to see the actual flag moving, it's not,
yes.
that adds a lot, isn't it? The fact that it's not a sculptured flag, that it's an actual flag.
Many visitors say, seeing the statue is an emotional experience. People stand and look up at the six men, and they take pictures, just as Joe Rosenthal did on Mount Suribachi.
It's quite emotional.
It is. I mean, when you look at the photograph that was taken by the photographer, that was a one-in-a-lifetime picture, which he could take another million pictures and never get one which would stand out and represent not humanity, but the success of making people free.
You know, from heroism.
Heroism. Yeah, because you know, you read lots about what people do in war, and some things just go on and above what you would expect. So it's very good to come and see it.
Soon after the photograph from Mount Suribachi was published, some people began to dispute it. They suggested that Joe Rosenthal had placed everyone where he wanted them and then took the picture. Joe Rosenthal always said that was not true. Many other photographers with him also agreed it was not staged or posed. Experts in photography say it is easy to tell that the photo was not posed. They say no photographer would make a picture that hides almost all of the people's faces. And they say no photographer would have two of the people nearly hidden. You can decide for yourself. A copy of Joe Rosenthal's photograph and pictures of Felix DeWeldon's statue can be found on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. Our program was written by Paul Thompson. We had assistance by Kim Varzi and Kelly Jean Kelly. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for This is America from VOA Learning English.